Good morning, everybody. It's Tuesday, January 20th, and it's 7 o'clock in the morning here in the South Secret Coast, which is Biloxi, Mississippi. So there are a few new people that I'll be sending this to in a direct email. Those of you who are monthly subscribers on Substack and those of you who are monthly patrons on Patreon will also receive this. And those of you who have donated in the past, made one or two donations, and also those of you who we consider really close friends who've also donated, so thank you for that, will also be receiving this. I wanted to just kind of do a brief overview of where we are, where our head is, and where our hearts are in 2026 so far. So like I said, it's 20 days into the year, and if you go back 5 years to 2020, it was around January 19th or January 20th that I did a very short video sketchbook called Fully Ado, and on YouTube, and I put it on YouTube, and it's really only like 15 minutes, and it goes back to, you know, earlier versions of how we would do video essays or video sketches, or basically what we do is we take these ideas that we have or these streams of consciousness and then just put them to video and add features to them, like found images that we felt would support the language, right? So it's pretty rudimentary. I'm okay with it. I mean, I think I talk too slow. So if you do go back and listen to it, YouTube gives you the option to listen to things at 1.5 speed or 1.75 speed or 2.0 speed. So I would say speed it up, because I talk really slow in the video. And I think it's just that, you know, I felt that was what I needed to do in order to get the point across. There was a time in my life where I was doing lots of theater classes, and I did a couple of film classes, and one of the things that I learned in film class back, you know, 1,000 years ago was to really over-enunciate and really get your point across and speak clearly and speak succinctly and speak slowly. And so I think I was just pulling from those courses that I took back in the day when I did this video. I'm not making excuses for it or apologizing for it. I'm just kind of explaining why I speak so slowly. And, you know, since then I've realized that people really just, you know, especially in this day and age where everything needs to be immediately spoken, and there's this sort of this sense of like instant gratification in this world, I've since then in our video essays and in our video sketchbooks and anything that we create, or even when we just do like a broadcast together, we just talk in normal tones, kind of like I am right now, where we just talk and we don't try to over enunciate our words or really get our point across slowly. So if you go back and listen to it, play it back on a speed that's a little bit faster than the normal speed that it automatically defaults to. It does really touch on where I feel that we are now, 5 years later. And I think that we are in this totally different place. We're in a space of sort of, I hesitate to go here because, and I'll explain why in a minute, but we're in a space of mass psychosis, right? Which is folie à deux, or folie en masse, which means the madness of many. And of course, folie à deux means the madness of two. So it's, it's pretty common that when you have two individuals that are living in the same household, they start to take on their similar personalities of each other. That's why it's important to have separate lives as well as lives that are, you know, one. So JP and I are married, so we have one life, but we also have separate lives. I do these audio broadcasts. He has a job that he is, you know, that he's required to go to. And so we have these separate lives, but we also have one life together. So Fali Adu is where two individuals live together or are influencing each other, but they are not aware of the influence, and they're not aware, they're not coherent to how they may be picking up on the idiosyncrasies and even the madness of their cohort, right? Of their person, right? So I've been thinking a lot about that, and I've been going back to that early pre-quarantine. So quarantine was dropped and then removed from YouTube many years later, but it was dropped at the beginning of the COVID experience. And it talked about, you know, basically the rise of fascism through COVID and through the COVID experience, and how we are becoming closer and closer to a police state as a result of it. And some of you listening might not agree, and some of you might agree that we actually are. After all these years of witnessing, you know, you're all witness to what's going on in the world, and in your own way, you're translating what you're witnessing. You're translating it in your own subconscious, and that's your worldview. That's what makes up your worldview. And so as long as you have a worldview that is singularly yours alone, then I think you're good. And this folie en masse, or this folie à deux, which is the madness of two or the madness of many, won't really affect your position, and it won't really affect you. Your brain is not weak. If you have a worldview, you've been able to archive the data, you've been able to assimilate your understanding of what you're witnessing. You're a witness. This is what I'm saying, is that you're a witness to everything. And you're able to self-evaluate and then also evaluate the world around you and your position in this crazy world, then you're good. I think you're good. Like, I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not, you know, I don't have those credentials. But I just assume that you're good. You're probably someone that I'd want to associate with, and someone that I'd want to be around, because you are completely 100% dedicated to your own unique version of the world and your worldview, even if it differs from mine. I appreciate that. So the madness seemed to have reached a crescendo during, like, the COVID experience, of course, but also prior to that. During the whole 2016 election campaign, it seemed as though the madness had crescendoed to a space that pushed a lot of people away from worldviews that they had adopted before the 2016 election. So we're going back almost 10 years now at this point. So the reason that I did Fali Adu, and the reason that I felt it was so important, was because I felt that there was a weakening of the spirit, a weakening of the social contract, and a surge toward, you know, groupthink, and a surge toward, you know, adopting the principles and adopting behavior that you would never in a million years ever adopt in your personal life. So you fast forward to January 20th, 2026, which is a full 5 or 6 years after I did Fully Ado, and I realized, wow, we are in a completely different space than we were back then. But I knew something was around the corner, which is why I did it. I felt a sense of urgency. I felt a quickening. I felt an anxiety in me, and I'm sure a lot of you felt it, and some of you have had, you know, had felt it and started to sort of emotionally and maybe even financially or prepare. So you were preppers. You prepared for what was around the corner back all those years ago, because you knew that by the time March of 2020 hit, March 13th, 2020, when the national emergency was declared by the Trump administration, Friday the 13th, right? Everything, you couldn't put the genie back in the bottle. You couldn't go back to where we were. And where we were wasn't great, but it had a sense of a little bit more freedom and autonomous living than we have now. And we knew that it was a reset. We knew it was a technology reset. We knew it was a corporate reset. We knew it was a financial reset. And we knew that it was a reset of our way of thinking about the world. So we all prepped for that in our own way. I remember back, I want to say 10 years ago, it would have been 2015 or so, JP and I used to listen to the RT Network on YouTube. I think YouTube eventually took it down. But there were these two broadcasters who were talking about sort of how 30% or some percentage of the world was going to be underwater within 5 years. And they were talking about it as if it was literal, like the rise of the sea level, you know, storms coming and drowning, you know, entire regions of the world and of the country especially. And so JP and I did a broadcast on that, and we said, you know, this is pretty intense what they're saying here, and we want to kind of explore what they're saying. And a good friend of ours who lived in San Francisco at the time, this is back when we lived in SF, he jumped onto the broadcast and he was like, man, you guys are scaring me. Like, what's going on? Well, looking back 10 years ago and looking at that broadcast that those two broadcasters did for the RT network, they weren't talking about literally being underwater, like weather events, which we have had weather events, of course, since then. Really suspicious weather events, I think we can all agree. But they were talking about, you know, financially, how we're underwater, you know, with our debt, you know, something like $30 trillion in debt. We are underwater. We live in an existence that is totally inverted, right? And so that's what they were warning about. And I think that if you go back to 10, 15 years ago, and you listen to maybe a few mainstream broadcasts here and there, that there's always been a warning, there's always been a message that was sort of coded into the delivery that said, okay, this is going to happen. And we should all be prepared. But what they were saying was fantasy. What they were saying was fiction. You know, like San Francisco was not going to be, you know, literally under the sea level. Like that never happened. However, San Francisco was the one city of all of the cities in the country that still to this day is not recovered fully, well, at all in any sense, from the major massive closures and just the complete detonation of the downtown corridor, especially. We're talking Union Square, Financial District, Market Street. Like, it never recovered. And so many people just fled San Francisco. My San Francisco friends moved to Arizona, one moved, I think he now lives in Colombia. We live on the Gulf Coast. You know, so many people just fled San Francisco because they just knew that of all the cities that would be affected by the business closures, which were mandated, by your like your school boards and your civic boards and all these people that suddenly felt that they had the authority over you, that something wasn't right with that. You know, there's no code in place. There's no code that literally says, you know, by this code that was established on this date, you know, the assistant to your mayor has authority over you. Like there's never been anything like that. So people were really upset about the closures and about some of the really ridiculous rules that took place. The celebration of these rules too was equally ridiculous. I mean, friends of mine were celebrating wearing a mask, holding their arms out and joking and saying, "I think this is 6 feet," you know? And I was just like, "Oh my God." I in a way I felt like it was irony, like they were making fun of these new rules, but at the same time I was like, "Why do we even have to give it any credibility at all? Like, why do we even have to like acknowledge it?" So that was part of the mass psychosis, I think, that took place. Too, and even when the person was being ironic, even when they weren't really taking it seriously and they were just trying to make a joke. I have a friend in San Francisco that it's hard to tell if she's serious sometimes about like what she says about things or if she's being like deadpan. You know, it's hard to tell, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and say that she was being ironic. Okay, so here we are. And we are all in our different places now. Like I've moved 2 times. You know, I've had 2 cross-country moves since 2018. I've also come to make some personal just you know, I've come to some personal discoveries about myself. JP has come to some personal discoveries about himself. And I think the latest issue that people are talking about, but of course they're not going deep enough, is the exposure of narcissistic personality disorders and how these types of personality traits are really weaved into our culture, and so baked in that it's really hard to unravel and undo this, but people are trying. I think the first, and of course it stems directly from the authoritarian nature of our culture, of course, here in the United States, and how, you know, you could go back to the founding of the country, and you could see that it was men of means who were gaslighting the lower population to blow their own limbs off in order to grab land that would end up going back to the men of means anyway. So they were gaslighting these poor people, whether they were slaves or whether they were just the impoverished from England, you know, and gaslighting them and saying, "We're going to give you wealth and land and influence if you do this war for us." And it never happened. And, you know, there were certain groups of spies that were uncovering this about the wealthy elite that were gaslighting everybody. And, you know, so these groups of spies, if you fast forward to the 21st century, which is where we are now, so we are that group of spies. We are accurately describing what is truly happening. Like we are, all of us, in our own way and in our own version, whether we have platforms or we don't have platforms, whether we have social media influence or we don't, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, when you go to bed at night, you say to yourself, "I know the truth." And the truth is, and then whatever the truth is for you, right? At least about our country and our culture. So it doesn't become really, it doesn't become a political analysis. It becomes a personal worldview analysis based on your own lived experiences. Based on the way the world treats you. one of the things that is really being exposed right now is a couple, well, there are quite a few things, is the mass casualty event that is taking place right before our eyes, which far surpasses right now, in my opinion, mass casualty events of great world wars. So you had World War One, you had World War Two. So this is a mass casualty event that is eclipsing the loss of lives that, you know, came about as a result of fighting empire, right? Back when the German Empire or the Nazis were trying to take over the world and everybody banded together to fight them. There were mass casualties in that war, but I think that what we're experiencing now through various means, not just through like medical interventions, but various means, there we're witnessing mass casualty. And those various means include biological agents, which are being marketed and sold as vaccines. SSRIs, which are mood stabilizers, being sold and marketed as mood stabilizers, like you're being told that your kid has ADHD when really he's just a rambunctious, you know, eight-year-old. And so you put him on these medications, and he's on these medications for the next 10 years of his life, and then you wonder why he commits suicide at age 18, right? So that's a mass casualty event. We had the highest rise of child suicide. We have the highest rise. We have the highest rate of infant suicide, infant death, than any country. So we're undergoing a mass casualty event right now, and the data supports it. The anecdotal individual stories support it. The stories of you know, individuals coming out and saying every single one of my family members has died supports it. So not only do we have this mass casualty event that is sort of like the big purple elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about in any real sense because they're afraid to bring it up with their family because they'll their family, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner or at family events because the family will just poo-poo them and say, oh, stop that, you're just being conspiratorial. We have an overabundance of people when, you know, they'll argue that we're overpopulated when we're actually underpopulated. That's the truth. So not only do we have this mass casualty event, but then we have another mass psychosis of the fracturing of language, you know, where you can't communicate. So you have a gag over your mouth. You literally have a piece of tape over your mouth in certain situations and in certain social situations where you pick up on the cues, where you know, like, you can't say a certain thing and you can't be a certain way and you can't do a certain thing in order to either, you know, keep your job, stay in a healthy relationship with the family. You know, if you want those physical connections and you want those paychecks, then you really have to edit yourself. A really wonderful person that I've never had the pleasure of meeting in person, but someone that I highly respect and who I'm super happy for their happiness, said that their partner doesn't like to like listen to my broadcasts or my audio broadcasts because, quote, they're not political. The partner is not political, and the friend doesn't want to upset the really comforting and safe space that she's finally found with a partner. And I was like, I'm happy for you, but I'm also sad that you have to edit yourself. I'm also sad that you can't have these open discussions. Now, I do believe that they can. I do believe that the friend and the partner can actually sit down together and have really engaging open discussions privately, and that's fine, that's good. I mean, JP and I do it every day, right? It's just part of being married. You just have these really deep discussions about, you know, where the world is going, how we fit into it, our position in life, how we were born, you know, the status that we were given when we were born subconsciously by our families and by the political and social and cultural machinations that tend to make us eligible for things or not, you know. So it's just part of life, right? So we have these really insightful discussions, and sometimes we carry that insight into the channel, right? And we talk about it and we talk it through. So where are we now? If we were at a place in, you know, say the 2016 election, where there was this mass psychosis going on in the world, and then it transferred into authoritarianism in 2020, when we were told that, you know, we couldn't keep our businesses running and our children couldn't go to school and we couldn't have, you know, Tupperware parties and we couldn't go hang out with family. And next thing you know, your siblings or your aunts or your cousins or your parents are saying things like, well, if you want to come spend, you know, the holiday with us at the lake, then you need to come with a piece of paper that says that you, tested negative for COVID, like you were some criminal or something. And so then it became the conversation, well, does COVID really exist? Is it in our mind? Is it environmental toxins that are causing people to get sick? And then came the conversation of, wait a minute, there were people that were put into hospitals that never needed to be, especially the elderly, and then they were killed off during 2020-21. And of course, you know, if you've been paying attention to my Year of the Snake broadcasts, you would know that's another rabbit hole that I've gone down, because starting in July of 2025, I discovered that my grandmother was a victim to one of those 2021 assassinations, right? She was murdered. She was kidnapped and murdered, basically, is what happened. So, and so that opened up a whole new avenue of thought for me personally, and a discovery that I had to make about her situation. And in doing so, I discovered things about myself. And of course, you know, everyone's like, well, people that are close to me that know the full story and the full breadth of the story are like, you should write a book. So that's kind of where my mind is going lately, too. I don't know about that. Lots of people write books, but who knows? Maybe I can write something, have it edited. I do have a friend who's an editor. Have it edited so that it appeals to the population, and maybe do a self-publishing style type book. I don't know. I know people who would totally be supportive of that and help me with that. So that's something I could do. Regarding that story in particular. But if we move past all of that a little bit, and we go into sort of where we are now, we're encroaching on a subject matter that was just as volatile and just as controversial as the vaccine subject matter used to be back years and years ago. It used to be that if you stood up and said, I'm not vaccinating my kids, not to the extent that, you know, the CDC recommends, it was like super controversial. It's still somewhat controversial, but it's not as controversial as it was. More and more people who are of influence and more people who have amassed like millions of followers throughout their life, because either they're in the entertainment industry, or they're social media starlets, or they're influencers in this 21st century digital age, whatever, they've come out and they're like, here's why we're taking this position on this. And they're well respected. And so now we have certain individuals in places of authority that, even though they are not perfect, and they're definitely not the, they're not exactly what I would want in these spaces. They are influencing things like reducing the amount of vaccines that babies should get. They are pulling away from, you know, allowing toxins into our food. And they're just doing these sort of incremental steps, step by step, trying to get closer to that, to that that healthier space that, that, you know, other countries are far beyond us. I mean, you can't even go, from what I understand, there's, I heard stories where you can't even go into like a drugstore, in certain drugstores in like little villages in Germany. They're not even called drugstores, they're called apothecaries. And the person behind the counter won't even sell you a Tylenol if you have like a toothache. They, you know, they get really funny about chemicals, and so everything is as natural as can be. Doctors are like, I don't recommend the full vaccine schedule for your children, but it's totally up to you, you know. And there's these really just sort of logical conversations that are happening on a global scale about the vaccine subject. Okay, so it's not as controversial as it once was globally. Just like, you know, all in all, it's just not as controversial as it once was, because people realize that the pharmaceutical industries have basically taken, you know, the equivalent of tainted toilet water and thrown anything that they can into these medical interventions and called them vaccines just so that they can make billions of dollars in profit. Like, it's ridiculous. So now, you know, we can fast forward and we can say, okay, we're at this space now where we can have this intelligent dialogue around, you know, systems and medical interventions that are supported by military and supported by agencies that have no business, you know, involving themselves in our health protocols. We can say, okay, yeah, I think I still have choice. I'm still a human being. I have choice. You can't take that away from me. No piece of paper can take away the fact that I'm a human being and I have choice. Which then segues into the current trending topic of, that's really controversial and really sets people on edge and gets people really, really testy and really bifurcated and fractured, and society is fighting about it and screaming and hollering about it. And it you've got one side saying this and you've got another side saying that. And it comes down to certain individuals on this planet have taken a stand. They took a stand over their themselves and their autonomy. And they started to express something that is unheard of, especially when you pare it down into this really microscopic element called the nuclear family. Mom, dad, children, right? That's just your basic family unit. Mother, father, children. And when one of those children, so now in just about every family, especially in the United States, at least one out of three families, let's say, you've got one individual describing accurately the stories about the family and is expressing their inner authority, which is totally alienating themselves from their family, because the family is so used to them not having any inner authority. When you start to develop inner authority, it challenges all of the authoritarian and authority mechanisms that have shaped you and built you up your entire life. And so we saw some really devastating effects of an individual who never found their inner authority. And every time they would try to pop it up above the parapet, or they would try to break free out of it just a little bit, they would try to let their inner authority show, they were immediately slapped back down and told, how dare you? You're not allowed to have autonomy. You're not allowed to speak for yourself. You're not allowed to think a thing, describe a thing, or be a person. And so what did that individual do when it got to be so bad? Well, the story says that he walked into his parents' bedroom and he chopped them up with a hatchet. That's what the story says. Do I believe it? Maybe. Okay. So the narrative around, you know, not allowing inner authorities to come out and individuals in this nuclear family unit, not allowing them and supporting them to come out and actually tell their story and describe accurately a situation. It's not even telling a story. It's just like, you know, what's the number one thing you need to be concerned regarding writers, like real writers? I'm not talking like propagandists, like the New York Times or whatever. I'm talking about real writers. What is it that they always tell you? They always say, watch out for what you say or how you behave towards writers, because they will describe you accurately. That's their only weapon. All right. It's you know, something that we learned this year alone, or just within the last few months in late 2025. You know, JP was on the brink of absolute ruin, his reputation, his financial security, as a result of some very toxic, murderous agendas toward him. I mean, it was literally like this person wanted to kill him. And so the power of the pen saved him, because he described accurately what he was experiencing. And then he went and he told an authority figure about that experience, and he described it accurately. I did the same thing recently for myself regarding a personal matter. I finally had to just, you know, cut the shit and say, look, I'm going to describe accurately to you this situation. You're an authority in this, allegedly. So I'm going to describe it to you. So there are people who are finally saying my inner authority and describing things accurately. There are people coming out and saying that. And this is causing a major turmoil in everyone's consciousness. People are just absolutely flabbergasted and in shock by these individuals who are simply standing up for themselves. How dare you? How dare you stand up for yourself and not let me murder you? How dare you? That's basically what they're thinking. And, you know, you learn that in the family, nuclear family hierarchy, there are certain siblings that literally have such high, grandiose feelings about themselves that they will place themselves as the superior beings of their other siblings. And then they are supported by the parents or the parent in this delusional fantasy that this person has about themselves. And the parent and the sibling that places himself or herself higher above everybody else in the family, that's where you get your folie à deux, because they're in a delusional shared fantasy space, right? So it goes all the way back to that January 2020, January 19th or January 20th of 2020 video sketchbook that I did called Folie à deux, where it's basically a delusional shared fantasy space, and there is nobody there to correct the sibling in this nuclear family that says, I am above everybody else. I deserve. And so what they do, you know, I deserve everything. So what they do is they create systems and they create circumstances which do things like, you know, they keep their children away from their cousins. They keep their children away from their aunts or uncles. They do the separation, right? And then they feed a stream of lies and a stream of judgments into their own children, so that those children grow up with this warped version of their own family members. And so what happens is, you may have a narcissistic parent, you may have a narcissistic mother, you may have a narcissistic father. But what happens is that it becomes inherited in the children. And it doesn't seem like it's ever going to go away. And I think that's something that where we are now in society, which is really controversial, is you have individuals saying, because it's not going to go away, I need to tear myself away from this really dysfunctional paradigm called the nuclear family, and I need to just not acknowledge and walk away from them. And David and Victoria Beckham's child, Brooklyn Beckham, is doing that right now. So suddenly you're seeing more and more children of these narcissistic parents doing a thing and influencing others to break out and tell the truth. You have Angelina Jolie's and Brad Pitt's two daughters. The one daughter who is their biological daughter who they gave birth to is Shiloh. She dropped Brad Pitt's last name and became just Shiloh Jolie. There is Zahara, I believe is her first name, one of the children that they adopted many, many years ago. Zahara did the same thing. She dropped Brad Pitt's last name and is just now Zahara Jolie. So these are individuals who have said the dysfunction in this family is so like embedded into our names that we don't even want to have the names. And so I think what we're seeing is this new surge of controversial topics, which are going to help to shape society in the future. It started, I want to say that it ultimately started with the Chris or not Christmas, the Thanksgiving weekend episode that note that Oprah Winfrey aired on her studio podcast show that she has, where there's, people in the audience that are listening to the topic, and then of course there's the experts on the topic that are weighing in on the subject or the topic. And this particular topic was the no contact topic. And she was, giving, and I believe these statistics because just about every other person I've met through my life has gone no contact with their family. She said that there's like 65% of the population that has gone no contact with their family. Like they don't have a relationship with their parents. They're adult children. They don't have a relationship with their parents. They don't have a relationship with their siblings because they're tired of being the scapegoat. They were tired of being, this role was designated to them and attached onto them early on as a way to justify attacking, and as a way also to justify immoral or unethical behavior. That those people who were committing the immoral and unethical behavior would never in a million years accept that behavior on themselves. But it's okay to put it onto someone else, right? That's that really bizarre justification, right? So I think that we're now in this controversial space, like right now. I think this is the new controversial space. And you've got people that are saying, wow, these kids are just being spoiled. They're just, throwing temper tantrums. They're just, they're how dare they share the secrets of the family? And these kids are basically like, if you didn't want me to tell the truth, and if you didn't, and if you wanted us to be a healthy family and to have a relationship, then you would have done everything in your power to make sure I had a relationship, like say with my nieces or nephews. You would have done everything in your power to explain to me why toxic individuals in your life, who you yourself have said have caused you nothing but pain and regret, are lifted up and given priority over me, someone who's always supported you. Like if you didn't want me to describe accurately the situation, then you should have behaved differently to begin with. I mean, it's really that simple, you know? So, and there's so much conversation around the delusional shared fantasy space that these dysfunctional families have with each other, and how they just, they fortify their delusions by repeating their own fantasies and their own, you know, warped versions of reality. And so as this happens, and you're the scapegoat of the family, and you're taking small steps back, and you're looking at it from quite a few feet away, or you're taking that 30,000 foot view of them, you're going, oh my God, like, what the hell? You know, this is nuts. I don't want to be any part of this. This is appalling, right? And so it's those people that are so appalled by the behavior that they've taken a stand, they've separated themselves, they've gone public with this, embarrassed their parents, pissed off their siblings. And I'm like over here applauding them, because finally people are starting to get it. And so you've got Brooklyn Beckham, who's the son of David Beckham and Posh Spice, also known as Victoria Beckham. Unfortunately, you have the sad and tragic story of Nick Reiner, who murdered Rob Reiner and his mother, Michelle Singer. Apparently, that's the story we are told. You've also got the Jolie Pitts, who are like emancipating themselves from, you know, first comes the father, maybe, and then comes the mother, and who knows what's going to happen. You've got married couples that are together that have no relationship with each of their families. You know, I know somebody who was lied to by his family, lied to by his brother, you know, information that he had every right to was kept from him. I mean, this kind of stuff is really serious, right? Especially when you start getting into, like, you know, inheritances or money or something like that. You know, it gets really, really transparent. People start to show you who they really are. So I think that's where we are right now. So we've transitioned from a society that has become this sort of mass groupthink, right? And we've transitioned now into a bifurcated, fractured society where lots of individuals have lots of different personal worldviews and personal thoughts about, you know, the way the world works and all that. There was an individual who was Belgian during the COVID hype. He came out and he talked about how it was mass formation events were taking place. I forget his name, but he was Belgian. And I was like, for a minute there, I was like, okay, I can see where he's going with this, that, you know, that society tends to, without even thinking about it, in their subconscious, they unconsciously adopt a groupthink attitude, and they just kind of get swept in with this mass formation psychosis. The problem with the language of mass formation psychosis and this idea that, you know, we are all just sort of at the mercy of everyone else's thoughts, and we all just kind of become this big giant groupthink of where we all think the same. The problem with that is that there's no conversation around authoritarianism. There's no conversation around, you know, like what we were told happened in World War II, which is one of the reasons we were at war, which is that human beings with autonomy and human beings with independent spirit, human beings that have the right to live, were being marched into the ovens, you know, with a gun to their back. That's not mass formation psychosis. That's authoritarianism, like goose-stepping a person into their own death. And I think that that is what we are really looking at, is a goose-stepping into, you know, into our own ultimate mass casualty event, which is what we're experiencing right now through these different, you know, avenues. You know, I can tick off the box, all the boxes now. Like, I know somebody who is, who has allegedly died of alleged COVID. I know individuals who have died of the vaccine. I know children who have committed suicide. I can tick off all the boxes now. And it used to be that I could never do that. You know, that that wasn't in my history books, my personal history. Now it's part of my repertoire, right? It's part of the thing that makes me who I am, now that I know all of these people that have been the victim of some sort of mass casualty event. Every single, you know, every single explanation over their death. Murdered in a care home. I can check off that box, you know. child suicide. I can check off that box. I know every single person, you know, mutilated because of pressure from their social circle. I can check off that box. A friend who went and got two COVID shots and almost died and had to have like a hysterectomy, an emergency hysterectomy, because her body was filled with tumors and toxins within just a couple of months of getting the two COVID shots. This happened to a friend in San Francisco, and she was fine before. So you don't just get, you don't, your body doesn't just get riddled with tumors on the inside for no reason. There had to be an introduction of some sort of toxin into your system, right? So there, you know, there's been, I can check off all the boxes, right? And why is that a mass casualty event? Because she can't have children. She was childbearing age, so she was sterilized. All of these things that we are witnessing are all the things that our history books warned about. You know, and said, do not let this happen again. But because we're in the 21st century, and because, you know, there's such a thing as propaganda, it's difficult to tell the truth from the lies. And so we reset our brain, and we say, there is no way that this is an extermination event. There is no way that that is happening. We reset our brain, and we just live in a space of denial. And plus, in the modern age, you know, you've got single parents, you've got people who are working two or three jobs at a time. We don't have a lot of time to sit here and contemplate how it is a mass extermination event, right? We also don't have a lot of time to contemplate the nuances of this shared delusional fantasy space that takes place within our nuclear families of origins, and how that too contributes to the downfall of society, where nobody wants to be accountable for their behavior, and nobody wants to look at the, you know, the ethical framework that has been abandoned, just completely tossed aside in support of selfish desires, in support of, you know, delusional grandiosity, in support of narcissism, in support of exploring psychopathy. And how far can we push others in order to get what we want? That's the foundational ethics by which, you know, we stand now in this country. It's not, you know, the Beatitudes: be good, be kind, be generous, be patient, be, you know, be nice and be real. The foundational ethics by which our society is driven is based on, how far can I push this person in order to meet my agenda? That is really a dangerous place to be, which then contributes to the mass extinction event. But there are a few people in society who are doing an about face to all of it. To all of it. They're saying, I'm not going to be a part of your shared delusional fantasy space where you've created narrative around the family of origin that is not true. I'm not going to be a part of that anymore. I'm going to describe accurately what's going on, and I'm hopefully going to influence others to also stand on their own. Typically, these people are, also anti-authoritarianism. They're also anti-Nazi. They're also anti-war. They're, they also have the characteristics of individuals who ultimately want peace, but they realize what they've been duped into thinking up until now is that they had to be compliant, they had to be subservient, they had to suppress their inner authority within their families of origins in order to have peace and in order to have, this balanced world. And unfortunately, that's not how it works. That is not how it works at all. You do not set yourself on fire to keep other people warm. You do not, suppress your inner authority so that the authoritarians around you can create a dialogue that is nothing but shared delusional fantasies. That's not how it works. You have to find your inner voice. And one of the things that this platform did was it helped me to find my inner voice. It helped JP to find his. And it's helped us, in many ways. So this has been about an hour. So I want to thank you for listening today, January 20th, 2026. And what I'll do is I'll include the link to Folie à Deux. In January, from January 20th, 2025, it's not easy to find. I went through a list of the different video essays and video sketchbooks and various broadcasts that JP and I have done together over the last 5 or 6 years, and a lot of them were removed by YouTube. We noticed. I was like, "Hey, did you see all of? Look at all this removed, removed, removed." I had no idea. So, it's a good thing that we keep our original files so that if we ever wanted to upload them again to see if YouTube would delete them again, we could do that, or we could use another platform like Rumble or something and put them up there. I am happy to say, though, that New Constitution Living War Crimes still does live on our YouTube channel, and it has about 32,000 views. So I'm really happy about that. But I will include the Folie à Deux. It's a very short, it's only like 15 minutes. And it basically talks about mass psychosis and delusional shared fantasy space in a family of origin, and how that then trickles out to a folie en masse, which is the madness of many or the madness of a society. But again, I want to make sure that people understand that this isn't some secret smoke that has, somehow trickled down into our consciousness and into our brains, and we're magically starting to think the same way and be the same way, and we live in this shared fantasy space. No, we're living under authoritarianism and gaslighting to the extreme. But I'm going to go ahead and put Folie à Deux up there so that you guys can at least see what I'm talking about. All right, guys, have a great rest of your day. And you can reach out to us anytime. The email address is info@book-of-hours.com. All right, bye.